Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Alan Levy Show at blogtalkradio.com. Be prepared to call in now and chat with Alan and his very special guest right here at blogtalkradio.com. With no more further ado, please welcome your host, Mr. Alan Levy.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Alan Levy Show on Blog Talk Radio. I'm very happy to be here with you today. It's been a long hiatus for me on Blog Talk Radio in terms of my live shows. I'm very excited to be here, and I've been very excited about what's going on Blog Talk Radio. And once again, you're listening to the Alan Levy Show, either live at blogtalkradio.com, or you're listening to this archive, which is played at a number of places, most notably blogtalkradio.com/Alan Levy. So thank you for joining me, and thank you for listening and being a part of Blog Talk Radio. We're very excited about what's happening here. I was looking earlier today. We had 101 shows scheduled to air today live. Just in one day, 100 shows on so many different categories and topics, which I find incredible given the fact that back in September we had two shows scheduled on one of the first days, myself and Bob. So here we are at 101 live shows. I see the trajectory continuing to grow. Many, many great hosts, many great shows, terrific content that's coming on Blog Talk Radio, and I'm very excited by that. So once again, thank you for being part of this. Today we have two guests on our show, and the first guest has called in and is joining us now, and I'll introduce him. And this show is dedicated to sports, and then as a subset to that, the Mets. I believe all three of us are Mets fans. So, which is great. We should have some good things to talk about. The first guest I have is Paul Greco. He's with he runs the blog FantasyBaseballGuide.com. That's the site, and he's a host on Blog Talk Radio. And he did his first show last week, and he had a terrific experience, I believe. And we're going to talk about it today. And let me bring you on now, Paul. How are you?
I'm doing great. I appreciate you having me on today, Alan. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure. I was very happy that you came on Blog Talk Radio, and I read your blog that you had quite a bit of success after your first show. You had a lot of good comments. You had a lot of good traffic on that, which was great to hear. But given the fact that you're a Mets fan, we certainly allowed you. I wanted to have you on my show because I'm a Mets fan as well.
There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. I mean, every good person that's a Mets fan is cool with me. Living down here in San Antonio, now originally from Lindenhurst, Long Island, you don't get too many Mets fans. And when they come to Houston, it's kind of actually pretty cool because when you go to a Houston Mets game, it's almost a 50-50 as far as fan disbursements across Minute Maid Park. It's actually kind of cool. It's almost a family. I've been going for about 4 years now to the four-game series that they have out there, and I seem to run into the exact same people every single time. So the Mets have a good nation out there across the U.S.
Well, certainly the Yankees do as well, and the Red Sox do, and a lot of these major teams that go around the country, and many of the fans in those other markets are Mets fans, Yankee fans, Red Sox fans, and so on. So let me ask, when did you leave Lindenhurst? How long ago did you move to San Antonio?
Well, it's been a while. I moved away when I was about 14, 15 years old, and finished my schooling up in Vermont. And then I joined the military after a year in college and lived down here in San Antonio, moved down here, and pretty much been living here ever since, except for a three-year stint where I was serving over in Turkey for about 3 years. So I call San Antonio my home right now. I definitely enjoy the weather. I was actually up in Long Island a couple months ago back in February, and it was mightily cold in the city. And by the time I got home, it was 8 degrees, and I feel a lot more comfortable being down here where it's nice and warm than being up there where it's cold by you guys.
Yes, I could say that you're pretty smart in that regard, that's for sure. So let's talk a little about your blog, FantasyBaseballGuy.com, and when did you get it started? How long has it been up?
Well, I'm originally from GothamBaseball.com. Me, my cousin, and another partner of mine run that site over there. And last year, we started seeing a lot of traffic coming towards the fantasy baseball that I was writing for the site. So as a collective group, we decided to break it off into its own site. And we started that up about January 15th of this year. And to be honest, it's really blown up more than we expected. We try to put out new content every single day, and, you know, we call ourselves kind of like the fresh faces of fantasy baseball. You have a good group of guys right now that are doing blogs on fantasy baseball, and fortunately for me, you know, I've been one that's been trying to help out some of the other guys to get them notoriety, but, you know, fantasybaseballguy.com, for being in existence for only a couple months, is drawing a lot of traffic, which I'm really happy about. I try to be the average guy just like everybody else. You know, we proclaim ourselves the experts, and I like to put quotes around experts because, you know, you can only proclaim yourself to be an expert until you beat the best. You know, that's when you could be call yourself an expert. But right now, from the content that we try to put out there, I think we're giving the readers really what they want, which is we tell people how we run our teams, and then we show them daily in our journals that we're actually doing what we're saying. So we're trying to keep it on an even keel so that everybody understands that we follow our own directions when we give our advice.
I see. And have you been, obviously been doing fantasy baseball for quite a number of years. Did you always win the fantasy baseball tournaments with all your buddies?
Well, I can't say I won all the time, but I think I have more top three finishes than anything, which is, you know, pretty good. After last year winning the Gotham baseball challenge is when my cousin decided that I was actually ready to go as the fantasy baseball writer for the site. So I've won a couple CBS. I've won a couple Yahoo. I started back when I was 15 and in high school. I was writing program in the old days where, you know, I would get my stats from USA Today and try to, you know, drill them into the computer as fast as I could to get them out to the guys in the league. So I've been around for a while. I've been playing rotisserie for a while. So, you know, I have a lot of experience. And like I said, you know, the more you play, the better you become because you start to understand the different leagues and how everything goes. So, you know, I'm 32 now, so we're looking at 17 years that I've been playing. Like I said, I have probably more top three finishes than anything.
And where do you get your stats? I know that that's a big thing. But for the reader, for my listeners who may not be as familiar with fantasy baseball, just briefly describe what it is and how it works.
Sure. Fantasy baseball is based on the fact that you're in control of a team. Depending on what league you play, most have 22 players, some have 24. It's your chance to be the everyday manager, GM of a team, of collective guys if you've chosen in a draft. The most popular draft right now is what's called a 5x5 league, which takes batting statistics, five batting statistics, runs, stolen bases, averages, home runs, and RBI, matched up with pitching statistics, five of those, which is wins, saves, whip, which is hits plus walks divided by innings pitched, saves, and then their ERA. And on the batting side, you know, the more that you have, the more points you get in the league. So if you're in a 12-person league, you have between 1 and 12 points to get. So whoever finishes at the end of the year with the most points is considered the winner. But the draft is what really makes fantasy baseball, I believe, because that's the best time of the year. I think if you talk to most fantasy owners, it's the most exciting part of the year because it's the time to actually build your team. You know, most fantasy owners will tell you that you can make or break your team throughout the year depending on how we draft, and that's an absolutely true statement. You can pick up waiver guys during the year. Waiver guys are those guys that are sitting out on the waiver wire, which you can pick up during the year. But I like to think of the waiver wire, especially in the middle of the year, kind of compared to like when my mom decides to go, you know, to yard sales, and she sees something she really thinks she likes, and when she gets home and buys it, she throws that other thing away and puts it in a place, and then like 2 weeks later finds out that it's really not that good and ends up replacing it back with the old thing she had. So that's kind of how I compare the waiver wire later on in the season. But fantasy baseball is an exciting time. A lot of people, because it's so long, kind of get drawn out, especially after the All-Star break. But, you know, fantasy baseball, the way it goes, there's a lot of different intricacies, especially now with Sabermetrics coming into play, which breaks down numbers beyond scientific belief right now. There's so much information on baseball, on predictions.
But let's back up a little. And so each player, let's say you have 12 participants in the league, each would get, let's say, $100 or some amount of money to spend on players?
Sure, that's what we call an auction draft. There's really two types of drafts. We have a roto-style draft, which is what we call a snake draft. You're in a draft position between 1 and 12, and then once you get to the 12th position, 12 will pick again in the second round, so then it'll go backwards, so it's considered a snake draft. And then you have what you were just talking about, which is considered to be an auction draft, where you have a certain amount of money where you can bid auction style on different players that you like to have, and it's usually about $260. Some leagues use what's called keeper leagues, where every year you can hold on to certain players for coming into the following year, and they put an inflation rate on those players, so the dollar figures can go up and down. So what you're discussing with the money is an actual auction draft, similar to, you know, if you go to any type of auction out there picking up, you know, collectibles.
That's my son has been in a number of these tournaments. And we talk about, you know, I've helped him on the draft a few times down the road, and whether he's going to spend that much money on a Barry Bonds or he's going to go for a great relief pitcher, cross up the saves, or it's interesting. And again, how the season unfolds, and there's other opportunities for trades, of course, and so on.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Trades are definitely one of the most exciting and probably controversial parts of fantasy baseball. But, you know, like you said, when you start bringing in your son and the younger generation are starting to get into it, actually a lot of schools are starting to incorporate fantasy baseball into the mathematics. I know there's a few teachers out there that are using fantasy baseball as a way to show averages and ERAs and, like I said, WHIP, which is walks plus hits divided by innings pitched. So it's actually being used in some schools. So it's an excellent teaching tool as well, which I know when I was in school, they definitely would never thought of that. But now they're starting to see that, again, with the sabermetrics and how you can try to predict certain things on a way a batter's hit over the last several years. So, like I said, it's a great learning tool as well, not just for us, you know, middle-aged to late-age guys that are just trying to play just to be a part of the game.
Now, if you had to select your top five names, three everyday players and two pitchers, for the value, not the best players, but the value that you would generally see in fantasy baseball this year, who would they be?
Well, value is definitely a key term that's being tossed around a lot because, especially in auction drafts, depending on how much you spend comparable to the value, which is you want to base your value stats on what a player will predict to be the following year. And for me, my number one guy from a value standpoint would have to be Jose Reyes of the New York Mets shortstop, only because he is a five-category guy with the potential of hitting over 20 home runs. Plus, he gives you that potential of over 60 bases. And what's funny is Ricky Henderson had a really good comment a couple weeks ago, and they asked him, this is his 25th anniversary of him setting the record for stolen bases, and they asked him, you know, who they thought in the league now that might be able to take over that, and right away he said Jose Reyes. He goes, his potential right there is amazing. So you take a guy like that at the value, and he's probably going in most auction drafts probably between $30 and $40. Another guy that I really like, second base, only because of the scarcity at that position, is Chase Utley from the Philadelphia Phillies. Chase Utley, you know, if you take a look at his numbers, and from a Mets standpoint, I like to compare him to he's a David Wright type, you know, a second baseman that's putting over 30 home runs and 100 RBIs.
Oh, yeah.
And then you have a second-tier guy underneath him that, you know, you probably won't get probably until, like, the fourth or fifth round. The next guy I have on mine is Robinson Cano of, you know, the Yankees. And he's typically not going until the sixth, seventh round. So, you know, I like to look at those scarcity positions, second and short.
Right, okay. And what about pitching?
Well, pitching, I mean, the obvious guy on every board is Johan Santana. Johan Santana is far above everybody else. Johan Santana has been going anywhere from the first to second round. And then the next guy in line is from the St. Louis Cardinals, who the Mets get to face on Sunday on ESPN. And he's not really going in most 12-team leagues until the end of the third round. So you could see, you know, you have a guy that's going in the first, and then another guy going in the third. That's a lot of distance between first and second. So Johan Santana is far above everybody else as far as pitching.
What about Mariano Rivera?
Well, it's interesting. Mariano Rivera has been working on a changeup, which hasn't really been known. It was on ESPN the other day where they were grilling Ron Guidry, the pitching coach for the Yankees, and he started giggling because he really didn't want to give it away. But, you know, with him potentially working on this changeup, even if he throws it once in a game and it gets thrown around in the scouting reports and gets dished out to every team in the majors, it's going to be in the back of the hitter's head. So Mariano Rivera right now on mine is probably the third-rated closer in the game behind Francisco Rodriguez Los Angeles of Anaheim Angels, and Joe Nathan of the Minnesota Twins, who's in a contract year this year.
Really? So, Joe, you have Joe Nathan that high up? That's interesting.
Yeah, I think with the the potential for him. He has, being younger, you know, Mario Rivera's on, you know, the tail end of his career. Joe Nathan's probably in the middle. I see Joe Nathan having more, you know, 2 to 3 game saves, where Mario Rivera's probably, from what Joe Torre said, will be used sparingly in 1 to 2 days. He won't go through the third day. So when you look at stuff like that and you hear, you know, you hear these managers talking about how they're going to use their closers, which are a part of the local papers, which I read every single day, those are things that I try to key on, and when I make out my, you know, make out my cheat sheets, I take that into consideration.
Okay, now you're listening to Paul Greco from FantasyBaseballGuide.com. He's on the Alan Levy Show. He's joining me, and my number, if anyone would like to call with a question for Fantasy Baseball, is 347-677-0649. That's 347-677-0649. Now, we're expected that Matt Cerrone will be joining us. He's from MetsBlog.com, and I believe you know Matt, right?
Yeah, I've emailed Matt early on. We chat a little bit. Matt Cerrone has an excellent Mets site dedicated strictly to Mets, and he does an excellent job over there. He's probably one of the best Mets blogs on the web right now, without a doubt. He puts a lot of time and effort into it, and he's updating it 4, 5, 7, 10 times a day if it need be. And you know, I emailed him quite a bit during the winter meetings, which we were at for GothamBaseball.com, which was probably the most excellent experience I've ever had, to be around major leaguers all the time. I was like a kid in a candy store.
Oh, that's fast. So you went down there and to the winter meetings, and you blogged from there?
Yeah, my cousin and I, we did 2 podcasts a day while we were down there, and those were posted up over at GothamBaseball.com, and we wrote every single day. There's a lot of stuff that goes on during the winter meetings, which I was expecting a lot of work and a lot of hours. But what's funny is by the end of the day, and you're going down to the barn having drinks with everybody, the days just don't seem long. They just it's a nice even flow throughout the day. You know, you sit down and you ask questions of the managers, and just about every single manager was there. Willie Randolph was there. Joe Torre, unfortunately, wasn't. But it was an excellent experience for me. I think it was probably one of the most perfect vacation work days I've ever had.
Well, it's great. And, you know, with Blog Talk Radio, you can actually do live broadcasting from these types of events. So
absolutely.
We'll talk about that, you know, in the next conferences or meetings. Now, you just do baseball. You're not into football? I know that's.
Oh, no, I'm real big into football as well. I play a lot of the National Fantasy Baseball Association, all the big ones. It just seems to me, though, every single year I can make it to the Super Bowl, it seems, but for some reason I can never win the big one. You know, up to this point I've kind of felt like Peyton Manning until he won it this year. But at some point I'm going to get over the hump, and CBS Sportsline, the last 3 years, I've had one or no losses going into the Super Bowl and just can't seem to pull off the big one. But, yeah, football, I'm a huge, huge football fan as well.
You don't run a blog, fantasy football blog?
No, I don't right now, only because from the company standpoint of Gotham Sports Media, right now, currently, we only cover baseball. We cover the past, present, and future of New York baseball.
Now, you're affiliated with Gotham, is that right? Or
yes, I'm part owner of that, along with my cousin Mark Healy, who's the executive editor, and Gene Berardelli, who's our counsel. And what we do over there is we cover, like I said, the past, present, and future of the New York game. We also have a publication that goes out quarterly, which, you know, we charge $15 for the year. And some of our you know, I guess claim to fame of late is we have one of the most comprehensive college coverage in the Gotham area, in the, you know, that covers all New York. And this year we've just started covering high school baseball, which for those that live in the New York area is primarily just covered by Newsday. And we've started covering them as well. So we're starting to get notoriety from the high schools as well for covering all New York high school baseball.
I see. Quite interesting.
Yeah, so we're diving into that. And on April 1st, we also have a huge announcement. We're in the process of buying out another huge baseball magazine. I can't really give everything out because of legal reasons. But on April 1st, we do close a deal where we'll be getting another 100,000 subscribers for another magazine that's been around since the 1940s. So we're looking forward to taking over that and, you know, putting a new spin on baseball as well.
Now, how did you become aware of Blog Talk Radio?
Well, as a matter of fact, Tim Kuda over at the TimKuda.com show had me on about a week and a half ago. And after talking with him and having dialect with him, he told me about how easy it was to run this. And I've looked at some other ones. Maybe a competitor of yours would be TalkShoe.com.
Yes.
The one thing that I like, though, is that people, when they dial in, they don't have to be associated with the website. It was just, boom, they could dial in, listen, talk, and move on.
In other words, what you're saying is you're not required to download a client.
Right, exactly.
Right.
Exactly, which makes it a lot easier.
That you felt that made it easier for the host as well as the listeners?
Sure. Oh, absolutely. From my experience, I worked with TalkShoe.com in the beginning stages when I was with Gotham, and, you know, we kind of put our suggestions out, and one of the suggestions was kind of the way you guys are doing it right now, which has made my job as a, you know, working from the dashboard a lot easier. More user-friendly. The only thing right now that I've been having kind of issues with is actually getting, like, your intro to start. So that's been my only issue of late with Blog Talk Radio.
Well, as you heard at the beginning of this show, I did have the intro. We've been upgrading the servers. Yesterday we actually upgraded the server that controls all the uploading of the files. But one of the tips that we have now on the host dashboard is, and I'm looking at it myself, it states, refresh this page 1 minute prior to going live. So you need to refresh the upload files page 2 minutes before your show begins, and then the play button will appear.
Well, fantastic. I have a show on April 1st at 5:00 Eastern, so
right.
I'll definitely be looking forward to that once I have everything uploaded.
And do that. So that's great. And I'm glad to see that you're on Blog Talk Radio. We've been, you know, doing this now since September, so we haven't been around quite as long as TalkShoe. But we've been getting a lot of sports shows. I've been very, very happy with it, with the number of sports shows. We've got a lot of SB Nation shows. We have a show called Sports Column, Vin, and so many shows. I mean, we have shows also from many cities. You know, we have a show dedicated to Cleveland, Cleveland Tribe. So we have actually Matt is on the line, so let me bring Matt in.
Cool.
Matt, how are you?
I'm pretty good, Alan. How are you doing?
Great. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio and the Alan Levy Show. Paul Greco is on the air with us.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
Hey, Matt. Good to finally talk to you, except not having to do it through email.
I agree.
Well, welcome to our show. We've been talking about Paul's site, fantasybaseballguy.com. We've held the Mets discussion off until you've got on, so we have plenty of time to talk Mets. But before we do, wanted to introduce you as, you know, Matt Cerrone. You're with the blog. You run the blog, MetsBlog.com. And welcome to the show, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio. And maybe you can just give my audience a little background on you and your blog and what you're doing.
Well, first of all, thanks. I'm a big supporter of Blog Talk Radio. I think you guys are doing a great job. I'm really intrigued with where it's all heading. My site is actually just a web blog dedicated to following the Mets, all things kind of news, rumors, linking to pretty much anything that's written, about the Mets across the Internet. I've got predominantly myself on the site, but also have a few other guest writers that fill in every now and then. Try and do occasional interviews, that kind of thing, but for the most part, I'm just blogging my experience as a Mets fan and hoping to see them win a World Series this year.
Now, have you gone to camp? Would you go down to spring training and maybe get interviews with some of the Mets? Are they familiar with you? Jay Horowitz, I guess he's the press director, right? Do the Mets embrace blogging?
Well, actually, the Mets don't embrace blogging to the extent that it's not affiliated with MLB.
That's interesting.
Yeah, well, I think there's a couple reasons for that, and frankly, I'm totally, I respect it. I think they get inundated with media requests, and I can only imagine what that media department is like, especially over the last year or so. So I frankly don't have, much of an issue with it. I totally respect the position. But, there's little things that I think they're kind of missing the boat on. I think they view it as maybe, a little early in this sort of cycle of media. And, I sort of feel like part of my job is to try and educate them on it and get them on board.
Do you, Paul, do you find the same thing? I mean, if you've tried to reach out to some of the teams and are they resistant to blogging, or they embrace it?
Well, like I said, we have a publication that goes out every every couple months, and because of our affiliation, that's one of the reasons why we had the opportunity to go down to spring training. Is because we are associated with the MLB. We don't have as much resistance as probably Matt does from a blogging standpoint, only because we are accredited through MLB. But we have seen issues in the Mets media department where, at times, you know, we've been shunned out of, you know, interview processes, but probably not to the extent that Matt has, which to me is kind of unfortunate because, you know, Matt's, as far as his blog has been out there, Matt's got the number one, as much as I know, Matt, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think you have the number one Mets blog out there. And for someone that's putting as much as investment in to educate the Mets fans and those people coming to the site, probably should have some type of press pass to get in to do certain interviews. Now, if Matt was doing something probably in, like, Kansas City or Pittsburgh, he'd probably have no problem getting in there. But because of so much media hype that goes on in the New York area, that's probably one of the reasons why Jay isn't allowing bloggers to come in, kind of like what Matt said earlier, where he's probably getting inundated with requests to try to get in on any, on those types of interviews.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. I think to actually answer Paul's question, Mets blog is the number one site in terms of traffic. You know, they're all doing. The thing is, there are so many Mets blogs at this point. It's amazing. I think it's if they're not the number one, you know, blog to team, I think they're probably close. I mean, the Red Sox probably rival them if anybody, and then there's probably a distant third after that. But
really, not the Yankees. I would be surprised.
No, I think there are a lot of Yankee blogs. I don't know that they're regularly updated, which to me, you know, that's the biggest, you know, factor there. But and as far as, you know, going down there and getting a press pass, frankly, I don't know that I even want to do that. My biggest, you know, if I were trying to accomplish anything, it would just sort of be the credibility, you know, association with the press department and, you know, included in press release type things and help them out with charity stuff, interview type things that way. And I'm not really keen on sitting in the press box or even, you know, being on the field and that stuff because there's kind of a weird barrier there that I'm not really comfortable jumping over and not sure that my readers want me to in the first place. So, you know, it's a weird dance.
Let's talk a little about blogosphere and the online community in terms of sports, maybe a little more general, because I know you guys follow a lot of the sports activity that goes on. What percentage of the blogosphere or the online community is sports related? Do you guys have any idea?
I don't. I know there's quite a bit of following as far as sports blogs out there, but I'd probably have to say from a blogosphere standpoint, probably management and self-improvement, probably right up there, probably close to the top.
I would base it on where the ad money is going, is probably what I would use to gauge that. And from my experience with different ad companies, ad sales companies that specifically target blogs, you know, the majority of the money runs towards politics and pop culture, with sports really a distant third, unfortunately, from my point of view. But, you know, that I don't know is an indication of how many, you know, blogs there actually are. That's probably more of an indication in terms of profitable blogs or profitability. You know, but that is one way to look at it.
Well, I had heard a number close to 40%, which seems like a very high number for me. You know, I'm not sure. But I will tell you that with regards to Blog Talk Radio and sports, one of the reasons why we created this platform, we wanted to really target two areas. One was political talk radio, and the other one was sports talk radio. And sports talk radio, I love sports talk radio, and I've listened to it my whole life, mostly out of New York with, you know, the FAN. But I just think that sports talk radio is great, and people, I believe, will really adapt to it. And Blog Talk Radio, in my opinion, can be the preeminent sports talk radio platform out there. You know, who's to say that Mike and the Mad Dog are that much more talented than either you two guys or thousands of other people that are on the web that do tons of research on their specific areas of interest. So I think there's a great opportunity for sports talk radio on you know, in the blogosphere.
I definitely agree with that. I mean, as far as talk radio angle, I've never heard of I'm not aware of a pop culture, you know, radio talk show. I mean, for the most part, it's politics, it's sports. And so those are obviously the natural fit. you know, both of which are kind of 24/7 things. And as far as baseball goes, just speaking from, I mean, I'm a football fan, basketball fan to a much lesser extent. I mean, my majority of my sports entertainment is spent, you know, following baseball. You know, baseball and talk radio, I mean, talk about a marriage. I mean, because it's, you know, every day there's a new game, there's something. It's just, it's so constant that, you know, it's a 24/7 thing, and it totally lends itself to that as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. All right, top three, each of you, top three baseball events in the last 5 years for you.
Wow.
All right,
tough question.
How about the top one? Because I have one clearly laid out right now. I'm gonna throw it out.
Are we talking the one event
that gave you the most pleasure from baseball in the last 3 years or 4 years?
For me, I could go with two.
Two certainly within three or four. Yes.
From firsthand experience and just speaking as a Mets fan, I know that's, you're not relegating it strictly to the Mets, but
no,
that's
with anything. But you as a fan.
That's my cup of tea. So I'm gonna stick with Shea. You know, it would be last season at Game 6 for the Mets in the NLCS. To me, was one of the better feelings I've had, you know, being a part of the game in a long time. Just because there was such a fan camaraderie thing going on, where the fans really felt this weird vibe in the stadium to sort of will the team into Game 7. It was just a really harmonious kind of a thing. And then also from a Mets perspective, the 17 inning or the whatever the extra inning game against the Braves in the playoffs a few years ago, for me was being present for that was one of the most amazing things I'd ever seen in person. It was just, you know, it was surreal.
No, okay, I remember Game 6. Who pitched that game, by the way? Do you remember?
I don't remember offhand. I got to be honest.
I was there for one of those games, and the stadium. I have to say, after being in the stadium in '86, I think I'm dating myself, but I may even have been there for '69. I was 12. That's when I became. I'm 47, so I was there at '69. The stadium was rocking. I had never seen it really like that, apart from this past playoff.
Well, I mean, for me, it has to be probably not as glamorous as what Matt was talking about, but I had the opportunity last year during my family picnic, of all things. We had about 30, 40 of Grecos sitting in the stands watching a game, and I pretty much got to see everything that you can in a game. I saw Cliff Floyd pull back a home run. I saw Jose Valentin hit a grand slam. Carlos Beltran hit a home run from a standpoint of just feeling good, just being around people I wanted to be around. To me, that was probably the best experience I've had in a Met game in a long time.
Okay. Well, I'm going to throw mine out there, and I know when you hear it, you guys are going to say, oh, yes, it brought a big smile to my face. Game four through seven of the Yankees-Red Sox American League Championship when the Yankees were up
3-0. You can hear it right now.
What's that?
I said, you can hear us both laughing right now.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. Look, we're all Mets fans, but we live in a city. I mean, you're in San Antonio, but we've grown up living with, you know, being second-class citizens in baseball, and with every right, too, of course. You know, they've been remarkably successful, but you had to get a lot of pleasure from that, apart from being a Red Sox fan, of course.
I definitely enjoyed it. I can tell you, you know, from being away from New York for so long, I guess I can't feel like the second rate like you guys have, because when I grew up, it was during the 1980s, and that was the time for, you know, that was Mets was mostly the 1980s, and Yankees were on a decline. So for me, you know, during the 1980s, the Mets were it, and, you know, I don't get to experience what you guys get to experience in the city as much. So I guess I can't talk about that, but I would definitely say that watching the Red Sox come back and beat the Yankees was definitely a awesome experience for me.
Okay, well, good. I'm glad we got that out of the way. So the Yankee fans out there, I apologize, but, you know, I just had to. It's my show. I'm allowed. Let's talk about the Mets this year, since you were all, you know, you guys are both covering them, and Matt, of course, it's your primary job, really, is covering the Mets. What do you see this year in terms of the Mets? You know, obviously, they've had an awful spring. One of the worst, I think, on record, right?
Yeah, it ties their club record for losses.
Right. Okay. So that doesn't bode too well, I would guess, but of course it's not always determinative of what's going on out there.
No, you know, as Willie keeps saying, too, that it's not so much about the record, but about, you know, how they're playing. I think a lot of games this spring didn't really finish strong. They went with a lot of bench players. You saw, you know, Mike Karp and different people in there, you know, in the later innings. And so it's not as though they were taking the game seriously to win them. You know, so, yeah, I mean, I he's probably correct to that extent. However, from my point of view, they've been playing kind of sloppy, you know, missing cutoffs and not, you know, following up bases, and it just, you know, they don't feel like they're playing a real strong brand of baseball in the home stretch of spring, despite the results. To me, that's far more important. In fact, there was an anonymous quote from MLB.com today. One of the team veterans was saying how it just, there's a different vibe, or a paraphrasing, but it was something along the line of, you know, they're just not feeling it, that, you know, it's a different feeling than it was last year, and essentially, you know, hopefully when the bell rings, they'll be ready, but it just doesn't feel like they're ready. And I, just from my point of view, kind of feel the same way, and I think the fan base probably would agree.
Oh, I mean, I absolutely agree with you, Matt. I think some of the things that really are worrying me was the strong point of the Mets from last year, which is their bullpen. I mean, so far this spring, the bullpen's been atrocious. And, you know, watching what the Mets did last year, and the Mets not going out and re-signing a Chad Bradford, who was excellent for the Mets last year, was kind of mind-boggling to all of us when we were at the winter meetings this year. That kind of worries me. The one thing that I do look forward to this year, and I'm hoping it does happen, I'm not a big Sean Green fan. I didn't like the trade when they brought him over, and I'm actually starting to like the possibility of Lassen Millich taking that spot from Sean Green and putting him to the bench. I think Lassen Millich has the opportunity. If he has the opportunity this year, he could be potentially a 2020 guy, maybe even 25-25. You know, from all the quotes I've been reading out of spring training, he seems to have his head on straight finally, which is a good sign for New York Mets fans. I'm sure it's a good sign for the players who last year really resented the kid. So, I mean, I'm looking forward to a decent year. The starting pitching kind of worries me right now, you know, with we have Orlando Hernandez supposed to be pitching the second game, and he's, you know, coming back from injury. You got Duane Sanchez, who's out, so, and even an Aaron Hellman right now is kind of banged up. So I'm a little worried from a bullpen standpoint and maybe the right fielder's point of view, but overall, you know, the Mets are going to be there. Between them and Philly, I don't really see anybody else in the National League East that's going to be that competitive, so.
Yeah, you know, the thing is interesting. Last year, the Mets, obviously Perez did quite well in the playoffs, and so did Maine, right? And so now they're in the rotation. The Mets really were dormant this past year. They did very little. Can you explain that? I mean, why they didn't look to address the bullpen?
Well, I think I don't know if it was for a lack of looking. I think there was probably as far as the starting rotation goes, which is I think maybe what they were focusing most on. You know, they made valiant efforts in a bunch of different places that just didn't pan out, either because they were outbid or, you know, asking prices were ridiculous or whatnot. And, you know, as far as the bullpen goes, I mean, I think they were fairly confident that Duane Sanchez would come back, probably working a little harder, be a little bit more in shape. Turns out that this hairline fracture probably would have been an issue regardless of how he performed, prepared in the offseason. It was there regardless, probably would have popped up at some point. But nevertheless, I think they kind of counted on some of those things a little bit too much. And, you know, I don't know, maybe it backfired. The thing is, it's early. I think I would wait and see how the bullpen shakes out. I mean, I have my concerns as well. But, I think it's going to be better than I think most people feel.
But you look how the Yankees did. You know, the draft, the trading of Cashman, I think he's a genius. I know he's made some mistakes, and Pavano was a bad trade, and or signing, and right, but this Bobby Abreu move, great move. Pettit, I know he's hurt, but see, I don't know. What do you think of that move, Paul?
Well, I tell you what, when we're at the winter meetings, I thought Cashman was far ahead, in standpoint of being a GM. I mean, the guy, he has more foresight than any GM that I've seen in a while, because he came out when they finally said, Cashman, you're the man, you have full control. His first order of business was, I want, my minor league system to be strong, and I'm not going to trade players away just to trade them away like they've done in the past. And that's why I think you're starting to see the Yankees you know, minor league system being in the top five right now as far as minor league, not statistics, but depth across the entire minor league system. So I'm a big Cashman fan, you know, probably the only person I really like from the Yankees because I like what he's done and how he stockpiled that minor league system.
Yeah. I like Cashman, too. I'm just not sure the moves he made are applicable to the Mets. I don't know that one has anything to do with the other.
No, not at all. I'm just making a comment in terms of
one's
approach to the trades, and I agree. I mean, and he somehow, Cashman, gets to do, he makes these trades, and he unloads, like, for example, he unloaded Sheffield, which everyone knew that he didn't want. It was very expensive, I don't know, $13 million a year. What do you get, three or four pitchers in return for Sheffield?
Right.
Remarkable.
Yeah, for a guy on the back end of his career, 38-year-old, you know, right fielder coming off of wrist surgery, you know, that's, to me, you know, the guys that they brought in, you're going to see in the rotation in, you know, the relief corps in about a year or two, which is, you know, it's going to make them even stronger where you at, you know, a Sheffield who probably have a decent year this year. I think he'll have a, you know, comparable year, not bad, but in where was he really going to fit in that Yankee lineup?
Right.
I agree with everything you're saying. I'm just, maybe I'm having a hard time making the connection between the question and that. I mean, I don't know who the Mets are going to trade to get Humberto Sanchez like the Yankees did with Sheffield. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what general manager savviness necessarily, like, I don't know what options were out there or what moves were potentially, you know, able to be made that maybe Minaya missed to fill in some of these voids. Like, I'm not sure.
Right, I mean, not the ones that the Yankees did. I guess it's maybe signing a Bradford or fortifying the when Mota, you know, comes down with this steroid issue, you know, he's out for 50 games. So, you know, going in pretty light. I know Sanchez is off injury. So, you know, I'm not saying that he would have been able, you know, that he should have made any of those deals that the Yankees did, but you know, just a matter of interest. That's all.
No, I think part of it is the market in general. I mean, relief pitchers, you know, get a pretty good chunk of change to, for the most part, underperform. I mean, it's so year to year with most of these guys that you know, I sense there was a reluctance to really commit anything long term, not necessarily dollars, but long term, you know, years to guys like Bradford, to whoever, and then they turn around and give Schoenweiss a 3-year deal. But he's a lefty, you know, it's kind of a different thing. He can spot start. He's a little bit more versatile. Bradford was sort of a one couple batter kind of guy, and they can replace that. I think they knew they could replace that with Joe Smith, the rookie. So I think some of those moves were justified. And you know, if you look at what the free agent market was with relief pitchers, you know, fairly underwhelming. I mean, I don't know that there was anybody in there that was going to be a deal breaker. And if you were looking just to have numbers, they had that, just not a lot of them panned out.
Right, I see. So, okay, well, that's we hope they do well. I think that the batting order certainly should be tight. I mean, what is it now? I know they were putting up Wright in the number two spot. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's where I'm here. I'm here that they're going to move right into the two spot. That's as early as this morning when I was listening to some of the talk show radio through the Internet, is that he'll be batting ahead of Carlos Beltran, which I guess is a move that, you know, with Paul LaDuca struggling so much right now during spring training, they're going to pretty much swap spots in the lineup. I think it's a good move from a Mets standpoint because now you have more firepower up front. You know, and David Wright, you know, he's a guy that has just as much contact as LaDuca, but also has the opportunity to drive in runs as well at the top of the order.
Yeah, you know, I get the sense, I don't know that it's so hard and fast either. I get the sense that LaDuca is going to get a lot of rest this year and that, you know, maybe a third of the season you may see him sit, you know, 20, 30, 40 games, something like that. And during those games you may see Wright bat second. I don't know that it's going to be a permanent type situation. My biggest concern with that, too, is that you get Delgado and Alou batting back-to-back, which, you know, is kind of unorthodox. And then LaDuca batting down in the order, right, just kind of seems a little light to me. I'd almost rather that sort of singles machine be at the top if he's going to do anything at all. So it seems kind of strange. I don't know that they would commit. It doesn't sound to me like that's a committed lineup through the course of the year as much as it is every now and then for whatever circumstance and gives them kind of some versatility and whatnot.
I thought that LaDuca did a great job last year. I mean, he really was a good, tough out.
Yeah, I agree. And that's when he's in the lineup.
Right. That's why you got him. You didn't get him for his arm, right? And he doesn't have a great arm. You know.
Well, he's a guy that, you know, is a pitcher's catcher. I mean, you go all the way back to Florida and even back to the Dodgers. I mean, he was in control of the pitching staff. You know, he had a great command of the pitching staff. The thing that worries me about Laduca is right off coming into spring training wanting to get that contract extension and, you know, the Mets management telling him that they don't want to talk anything until after the season. I think that's going to kind of play heavily on his mind this year. And, personally for me, I don't think he's going to produce as well as he did last year where he had, you know, the comfort of knowing he's coming into Met camp again this year. Now he's not exactly sure. He wants to be a Met. He said that over and over. He wants to be a Met. It worries me from that standpoint. And, you know, Matt was saying that they plan on sitting him 20, 40 games. With that, if they're sitting him that much, he's not going to get the money. I think that's going to even weigh more heavily on his mind as the season goes along.
Matt?
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, I guess the flip side to that that's often used is, you know, contract year, people maybe are a little more motivated. Maybe they perform better, but, you know, I don't know. I suspect that goes either way. I'm sure there's different ways of looking at that. I think sitting him in terms of how that affects his how he profits next offseason, I think his age probably more than anything hinders that. He probably could go out and hit 320 or 330 again, and he still is going to kind of be viewed the same way just because he's going to be looking for a multi-year deal, be lucky to get one at that. You know, he's kind of older. He's at that point where catchers start to break down. I suspect that that's probably a larger factor than anything. I feel like the Mets are doing the right thing from a business standpoint and maybe waiting and seeing how this all plays out. But then on the other hand, if he walks, which, you know, the other thing is I think they know they kind of have him in the sense that, like Paul said, he wants to be a Met. So why jump the gun and commit to something when it may backfire on you? And I think that's probably the thinking, you know.
How did Moises Alou play this spring?
Paul, you
I'm sorry, that. I didn't hear a question. I'm sorry.
How did Alou play his first spring with the Mets?
Well, to be honest, he didn't hit very well. I mean, he did have, he batted 158. He didn't have any home runs. He only had 3 RBIs and 57 plate appearances. I mean, bringing Alou in is it was almost as if, you know, you're just replacing an old guy, broke-down guy with another old, broke-down guy. So, I didn't particularly like the deal, especially for $8 million a year for, you know, for this guy. I mean, he did produce last year when he was in the lineup, but, you know, how often is he really going to be in the lineup? That's where it starts to worry me.
I would have liked to like Soriano.
Yes?
My own opinion, I think that would have been huge.
So, I don't know that I want to see Soriano for the next 7 years. You know.
Oh, is that right? He signed what was his deal? He signed a huge deal, right? $130 million or
something like that. I mean, I think if it was 7, it was 8, it was something like that. I think he's got a pretty extensive no trade clause. Like I don't know. I personally have never been a Soriano fan, just because I think he's a loose cannon all over the place. But that would have worried me. I actually kind of liked the loose signing. I think most people did at the time. He's historically not really a big, you know, spring kind of guy. And a lot of these veterans, they just sort of, put on cruise control and just coast through spring. So I'm not too concerned about that. I do like what he does or what I hope he'll do for the lineup, which is, you know, give them that, the bat they really missed, I think, last year, the right-handed bat. I think he'll do fine. I mean, and the other thing is, you know, he gets if he misses a good chunk of games, they have Millage, they have Chavez that can fill in that have done, you know, he's done well in the past. So I don't think they're worried too much about that. In fact, I'm somewhat positive they kind of padded that in, you know, and sort of assumed that he'd be out of the lineup for a little while. And I think you're going to see a lot of that. You know, Green, who knows if Millage is going to take over or how many games Green will miss. Laduca will be out a little bit, just resting him. You know, Alou. And I think there's going to be a pretty nice rotation. Valentin at second. And I think that's all part of what Willie likes to do, get these bench guys in there, keep them active, keep them fresh. You know, and I think it's all part of this sort of team, very team-oriented type thing that's going on. And I think Alou kind of plays into that as opposed to committing to somebody like Carlos Lee or Alfonso. It just kind of changes the dynamic of the team a little bit.
Right, that's for sure. I mean, Chavez made one of the greatest catches of all time last year in the World Series, in the National Championship Series.
To say the least. And in fact, I remember hearing something this spring, how he's getting a little tired of hearing about it. That's all everybody associates him with, which is pretty funny, kind of ironic.
You know, I watched that. I said, that's it. You know, Mets Mets have got to win. I mean, you know, when you make a catch like that, it just seems to me that that's, you know, natural. The Mets just should be winning it after that. It was certainly disappointing to see them not win it, for sure. So
it's a tough memory. You know, I think most of us as Mets fans, it's kind of bittersweet. I think when I think of that catch, I think, wow, that's an amazing catch. And then I'm reminded of how I felt at the time, which is like you're saying, ah, you know, here we go, and then only to be let down. You know, it is sort of bittersweet.
Right. Well, we have our share of letdowns, certainly not as many as the Red Sox fans, or so certainly the Chicago Cubs fans, which would we neither neither of the three of us would want to be living in Chicago as a Cubs fan, I think. Maybe this year they'll do okay. Well, anyway, listen, I want to thank both of you for joining me, and I want to thank you for, you know, being part of Blog Talk Radio. It was a lot of fun talking to you on my show. And this has been the Alan Levy Show with Paul Greco joining us from FantasyBaseballGuide.com and Matt Cerrone from MetsBlog.com. So, guys, thank you for being on.
You got it. No, anytime, Alan.
Our pleasure. Paul, have
a
good night.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule to talk to both Matt and I, especially on a topic that I think we both love, which is talking about the Mets. So anytime.
But we'll reconvene, as I said, maybe we'll go to a game or we'll reconvene it during the year as the season goes on. We'll rehash it again.
I'd love to do that. I'd look forward to it.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
This is a very easy topic for me to talk about, Mets, because I do happen to be a Mets fan and I enjoy it. And certainly speaking with Paul and Matt, both post on Blog Talk Radio doing shows, that's great. So, once again, this is Alan Levy doing on the Alan Levy Show. I will be doing a regular series of shows when I get back. I'm going to be away next week. And then after that, I'm going to be doing a daily show probably Monday through Thursday at 2 p.m. on blogtalkradio.com covering almost any topic. And I want to get back into doing shows. I really enjoy it. I've been busy, you know, we've been busy building the platform and building, you know, the company and bringing in all this content. I'm really excited about it, and I want to continue to do these shows, and I really do enjoy it. And it's kind of, after doing a show like this, I really realize now why we built Blog Talk Radio. It's just a lot of fun. So, once again, thank you for joining me on my show, and I'll speak